Okay, class, let's get started. The clock in here is about 5 minutes slow or something. Syllabus, right here. Okay, the clock in here is about 5 minutes slow, so we want to remember that at quitting time, but right now we'll get started, okay? This is Old Testament History Literature class, and welcome all of you to this classroom. The other class has previously warmed it up for you. And let's get these guys some syllabi. And here we go. Get some. Okay. So as we said, this is Old Testament History Literature course. And so if you're in the right class, we will be in this class, believe it or not, after the first day, you're going to say this is crazy, but we'll be taping this whole class. And what I hope to do is then make the tapes available online after. You're going to have to give me the weekend to work on rendering the video and editing video and stuff like that. And I'm going to try to get them on every Monday and things like that. So Kyle Lincoln will be our, he's going to be the TA for the class, and he's our video tape expert back there. So he's going to do the taping. He will also be running review sessions for this class when we get toward exams. There'll be review sessions and things. Kyle will be running those. And so that's the guy you need to know. And so let's open with a word of prayer, and then we'll jump into a kind of introduction to the class. All right? Let's begin. Father, we thank you so much for your word. We thank you that you've expressed your love and your anger, your expectations of humankind over the thousands of years that are represented in the Old Testament. Thank you that you allow us in this course to see your different relationships with people over so many centuries and so many different types of people. And Father, we are very different types of people. We seek to know you, we seek to love you, we seek to worship you, and we pray that this course might lead to those ends, that we might honor and glorify you, which is the chief end of man. We thank you now, and we pray for your presence here with us in Christ's name. Amen. All right, this is Old Testament. I think I'd like to begin going over just kind of the syllabus, just kind of get the lay of the land. And by the way, it's all right not to catch everything in this first class hour. It'll come over, you know, time. You're just beginning the semester and things. So let's just go through this. You see my name, I'm Dr. Ted Hildebrandt. Go by Hildebrandt, go by Ted. Just don't call me Teddy. Yes, ma'am, you need a syllabus? Okay. Actually, let me. And my contact information is there, my email. I do a lot of emailing. I'm sorry, I do old emailing. I don't do the, you know, Facebook stuff and things like that. So there's an old system they call email. And if you know how to use that system and stuff, if you don't, we can work with CET and stuff. They can get you going. I realize it's an out-of-date system, but that's what I still use. Sorry, I'm mocking myself out at this point. But anyways, I'm over in Frost 304, third floor of Frost, a bunch of profs up there. And my phone number, my extension is 4412, and the email is there. And usually my hours, I'm in most mornings. I usually come in about 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I'm usually in from 8:39 till noon. So if you have any questions or something you want to drop in, just talk about something, feel free to drop in just 9:30 till noon kind of thing. I'm usually there pretty much at the time. So, okay, let's do a course description. This is a course on Old Testament history, literature, and theology. It examines the Old Testament in terms of its history. And the history is going to be really important in the Old Testament because God is going to do these incredible things in history. In other words, this book is not just myth and legends. This stuff actually happened in history. And so it records for us the acts, the mighty acts of God in history. So we'll do stuff with history. And we'll be teaching this against the cultural background. In other words, this book, the Bible, comes to us from a very different culture than what you guys are used to in the 21st century. Okay? Moses wrote 1400 B.C. Abraham lived 2000 B.C. That's like 3,000 years ago. And so the culture is very, very different. Does culture make a difference in how when you try to understand somebody? Does culture make a big difference? And the answer is yeah. So we've got to realize the cultural impact of that. The Bible will be written in the Hebrew language. I dare say there's very few people, although I had one Jewish fellow in the last class who can do some Hebrew and stuff, but it's written in the Hebrew language. Now, by the way, does language affect how things get communicated? and sometimes what kinds of things can get communicated by the language. And so it's really important. By the way, the Hebrew people, they read backwards. They read backwards. They read from, you know, right to left. We read the other way and stuff. Now, by the way, do you notice I said backwards? Do you see what I just did? Okay. Is that a cultural thing? Would they say, we read backwards? Yeah. Okay. And so, anyways, what I'm saying is the language is different. When God comes in the Old Testament and gives us poetry, is the poetry that he gives us good American poetry? No. Do you realize Hebrew poetry does not use rhyme and meter? Rhyme and meter, which are so, you know, into English language, not even used by the Hebrews. They don't do like that. They rhyme thoughts and parallels and stuff. So it's a whole different way of doing poetry. By the way, did God adapt himself to that culture? Does God adapt himself to culture? The bigger question, does God adapt himself to culture? Or does God come down and says, hey, this is who I am, man. You guys do it my way or the highway. Does God adapt himself? When God comes down to write poetry, does he write Hebrew poetry? Yes, he does. Okay? So he adapts to their language, their culture, and that affects a lot of things then and how you're going to communicate. By the way, have you ever tried communicating in another culture? And I'm not talking about, I was down in New York City and went across cultural. No, I'm talking, have you ever lived in a different culture where everybody around you is of that other culture and stuff? And question, does that affect how you communicate and how you, everything's different, man. It's an interesting experience. And hopefully you'll have a chance to do that at Gordon College. But in some senses, you'll do that here because we'll be going to the Old Testament. And the Old Testament's going to take us back 3,000 years. So culture is a big and important thing in terms of how God expresses himself and how the people hear what they hear. By the way, does your culture affect how you hear this book? Are you locked into your 21st century culture? Have your schools prepared you and trained you and actually PCized you so that, you know, you are Americans and you're trained in a certain way? When you read stuff in here, are you going to be shocked? You're going to be shocked because the stuff is so different than what you've, you know, you're used to hearing. Because we're used to hearing, we have our stuff in America that we're used to hearing. And we pride ourselves in diversity, right? I just laugh because I don't think so. We're diverse within the scope of that little PC circle. And what happens here is, when you get in the Bible, there's no PC stuff, man. It's just life as it happens with all its ups and downs and stuff. And so you got to wrestle with that. And so I'll be kind of jamming that in your face, just watching you squirm and stuff, because some of that stuff is going to be shocking. It kind of shocks me at times and things. So culture is a big thing. Geography is another thing that's really important. I lived in Israel back after the Civil War and for a year, and my wife and I lived in Israel. And so I got to know the places because I walked those places. When it talked about, you know, going from the Mount of Olives back into the temple area and Jesus riding a donkey, I've walked that road. I don't want to tell you how many times, but probably hundreds of times. I've been exactly climbing Mount of Olives. I even climbed it in 8 inches of snow one time just to get a picture. But anyways, and what I'm saying is, when you know a place, it'd be like saying Jesus went to Danvers and went to the mall. Now, question, you know where Danvers is, you know the mall and stuff like that. When it says that, you know exactly where that is. And you say, okay, I understand now what's going on. By the way, does geography affect things? Does geography affect things? And let me just put it this way. Geography affect things. How many of you are from Massachusetts? Does geography affect things? How many of you are from New Hampshire? Question, you people from New Hampshire, does geography affect things? Is New Hampshire different than Massachusetts?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You say, thank the Lord. Okay, okay. Massachusetts different than New Hampshire. If you go to New Hampshire, they will tell you that. By the way, does anybody go to Maine? Is Maine different yet than both three? And I'm from, actually, the honest truth is, I don't know where I'm from anymore, but I was originally from Niagara Falls, New York area. And then lived in Israel, lived in Tennessee. I lived in Tennessee for a while. Anyways, my wife said, I better not do it. No, okay. This is on tape. No, I got to remember. But she says, I ain't raising my kids to talk like that. I kind of liked it myself, but she's an English major. So she's taught me how to speak proper. Lee. Okay, yeah. Yeah, just seeing if anybody's awake. But anyways, but what I'm saying is just geography. Let me just use that as an example. If you're from Tennessee, do you grow up as, to be honest with you, it's a different world in Tennessee than it is in Massachusetts. Seriously, is there a difference between the hills of Tennessee, are they very different than what you get in Massachusetts and things? Oh, yeah, yeah. And does that geography affect a person's worldview if they're from the Midwest, say, example, or if they're from Texas, or if they're from Alabama, okay? Okay, so geography affects things, and we're going to learn to read. Geography is almost like a language. Geography is almost like a language. You learn to read the geography almost like a language in terms of what types of things are reflected. Are certain places going to be, is New York City different than West Virginia?
Yeah.
Okay, in a city context, are you going to get one kind of worldview and one kind of way of being? Are you going to get a very different way of being in West Virginia? Tell me about Galilee versus Jerusalem. Is Galilee where all the bunch of hicks lived up there? In Galilee, seriously. And so Jesus is from where? Guess what? Okay, so when he comes down into the city, okay, enough on that. But geography, you learn to read geography and how that affects things. Literary backgrounds. The Bible uses literary forms. God uses the literary forms of that day. So we're going to get into things like the book of Deuteronomy, and all of a sudden you're going to be reading the book of Deuteronomy. You say, holy cow, look at that. It's almost exactly like a Hittite treaty form. The Hittites had their treaties, and the book of Deuteronomy fits that form almost to a T. Did God use the Hittite treaty to structure the whole book of Deuteronomy? Very likely, okay? So in other words, are there literary things? When God writes poetry and he does in Psalms, and we'll be learning Psalms like, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, and things. But you'll notice they don't use rhyme and meter like we do in English. They do parallelism and parallelism of thought. It's a whole different way of doing poetry. I love it. That's actually my area of expertise is Hebrew poetry, and it's beautiful. But anyway, so there's literary conventions. There's literary conventions that God will observe. One of those will be the Hebrew language. He'll come down and speak in Hebrew. Actually, let me just harass you guys just up front and stuff, but was Adam's name really Adam?
We don't know. They messed up all the languages.
Well, Adam is means man in Hebrew. Question, did Adam and Eve speak Hebrew? I want you to think about that just for a second. Did Adam and Eve speak Hebrew? Adam's name is man, Adam. Eve's name is Chava. It's actually Chava. You know Chava because you say L'chaim. Does anybody do L'chaim? Okay, you don't do that stuff. All right, L'chaim means to life. Okay, Chava's name, Chava, you call her Eve. Chava's name is built off to life. And Adam and Eve's names mean something in Hebrew. Question, could Adam speak Hebrew? And the answer is, I'll tell you flat out, he couldn't have spoken Hebrew, nor was his name really Adam, because frankly, the Hebrew language did not exist before 1800 BC. And if the Hebrew language did not exist, how could the guy be given a Hebrew name? I say, the whole Bible's up. Adam and Eve just disappeared. Okay, chill out, okay? But what I'm saying is, are Adam and Eve translations of their original names, probably? And did they translate names between cultures? Excuse me, some of you are in this class, and is your name a translation from your culture into our culture? Yeah. Okay, so is that anything threatening? The answer is no. They got the name, and his name was, who knows what it was, but then when they hit it into Hebrew, God says they got to understand his name meant, the original name meant man and stuff, so we'll just call him Adam. By the way, do we translate it from Hebrew into English?
No.
When it comes into English, are there any problems going between Hebrew and English? Yes, there are. So all I'm saying is you got to deal with the Hebrew language thing, and we'll look at language is important, so we want to look at literary backgrounds, ancient Near Eastern stuff. They've dug up all this archaeological things, and we'll be noticing some of the archaeology and what that's done to help us understand the Bible. Archaeology, comparative history, literature, theological themes, and various things. Western culture are explored, as well as the application of these texts as a foundation to personal spirituality. I will in this course, and it will bother some people, and I'll explain exactly why I do it. In this class, I will teach you the heady stuff to try to understand the Old Testament. You will learn the content of much of the Old Testament. Is the Old Testament too big for you guys to do in a semester? Seriously. The New Testament is one-third the size of the Old Testament. Okay, the Old Testament's huge. And so we'll cover some of it. I'd rather do some of it well than to kind of shotgun through it. So we'll do basically the history thing. My thing with the history is this. If I can get you interested in the history, and I will try my best to get you interested in history, if the history of the Old Testament is interesting, question, tell me about the prophets. Are they really interesting? And is the poetry really beautiful? So we'll spend a lot of time in the history, and then the history will lay the background for the poetry and the prophets. But anyway, personal spirituality. My goal for this course is to have you love the Old Testament, that when you're done, you love, basically, you love God and you love His Word. And in order to do this personal spirituality stuff, what I do is I tell a lot of personal stories. Part of some of the students like the personal stories because it makes the class more fun and they get to see how schizophrenic I am. I do that on purpose, though. The reason why is I want you to see modeled someone who's taking the Word of God, the Old Testament, and shows the connection with 21st century life. Okay? And that connection between something that's 3,000 years old and the 21st century. And I want you to see how that works out in one individual's life. And so I'll tell you stories that'll illustrate that of a very personal nature and stuff like that. And it seems to me, anyway, so that's, anyway, so think about in terms of how we think about God. And what I love about the Old Testament is this. I got to be careful of my illustrations now. Suppose a young man is dating a young woman, and he only knows this young woman in a work context. Suppose they work at McDonald's together or something, okay? And they both work at McDonald's together. They see each other a lot at McDonald's. And question, when he only sees her in one context, does he really know her? When he only sees her in one context, does he really know her? How do you get to know a person? Do you get to know a person by seeing them in many, many different contexts? Seeing them under stress. Seeing them with their parents. Is that pretty important? Seeing them with their parents. Seeing them with their siblings. Seeing them there with their nieces and stuff. Seeing them with their teachers or authoritative figures. And seeing them on the job. Seeing them off the job. How do they party? I mean, how do they, you know... When you see somebody in 100 different situations, then you get to know the person. Okay, we are going to get to see God over a period of about probably 1,500 years, 1,500 years, dealing with, is God going to deal in the Old Testament with hundreds and hundreds of people? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, the 12 brothers and stuff, Moses, Aaron, Miriam, etc. Okay, we're going to see God interacting with 100 people. And what I'm going to try to show you is that God is very different than what you may have grown up to think. And so I think all of us, including the professor, have what I call idols of the mind. In other words, ways we conceptualize God. And part of becoming Christian is having your view of God blown apart. Now, not blown apart into atheism, but blown apart into worshiping God for who He really is. And that wonder, and I guess that's what I'm going to try to do, and I'll just put the cards on the table is to prepare you for wonder in the mystery of God. And the wonder, what's cool about wonder? Let me just use myself for example, okay? So I go into the library. My brother, I was a little slow when I was in college and stuff. My brother set me up with my wife, basically, in the library. He was trying to sell her some drugs. But anyways, and so she went take the drugs. And she wouldn't take the drugs. And so he comes home, and he comes home to me. And I'll never forget it. He walks in the house. He says, "Ted." Now, you see, I was his older brother, and I was kind of like, straight, which meant weird back in those days, and he was doing all sorts of really bad stuff, and he tried to drop some of the stuff on her. She wouldn't take it and stuff. So he comes home and he says, "Ted," he says, "you got to meet this girl. I was in the library. She is as weird as you are. You got to meet this girl." So anyways, basically I went to the library, met her in the library and stuff, and he asked her out to the Messiah, Handel's Messiah and stuff, which she wanted to see. And so we went out then and things. And question, do I know my wife? This has been 36 years now. Oh boy, the videotape, I gotta. Are there still things about my wife that I don't understand after 36 years? And I want to tell you, you know what wonder is when you're fascinated with another person and you want to get to know them really intimately and stuff like that? Are there all sorts of things that come up in all sorts of different contexts? And your children then raise these issues, and all of a sudden she goes off on one thing, and I go off on exactly the opposite, and then we got to get our act together because the kids are playing us off against each other. Okay? the good cop, bad cop thing, and then we have to deal with each other and stuff. And so I want to tell you, I guess what I want to do is create in God that notion of a mystery of someone whom you love, and you want to explore who they are. And the guy has, God has sent us a love letter in his word, in his Bible. And therefore, when you really care about something, do you notice little things about them? When you really care about somebody, do you notice little things? And what I'm saying is the Bible is going to tell us a whole lot of things about God. And I want you to become fascinated, enamored with that, and that God becomes the object of your love, the object of your wonder, your mystery. And you get caught up in that. So sorry for going off in that, but that's okay. Goals, course goals, basic content of the Old Testament. The Old Testament, people know the New Testament. Jesus, you know, walks in the water. People know a lot of the New Testament. A lot of the Old Testament people don't know. Once we get out of Genesis, when we hit Leviticus, it's over. Okay. And so, you know what I'm saying? So we've got Genesis is good. It's kind of, you know, everybody knows Adam and Eve. And the flood and that kind of thing. So that would be good. Genesis is a good way to break in. But once we get much out of there, we're going to be swimming. There's a lot of stuff. So we'll learn the content of the Old Testament. I'm big on content learning and things like that. How did the Bible come down to us? Its origin and transmission. You know, I hold up this Bible. I use an NIV now. And how did this NIV come into existence? Did God write the NIV? No. You know who wrote the NIV? Marv Wilson. Okay, that was supposed to be a joke, but apparently it didn't go over too well. Okay, the honest truth is, he's one of the translators of the NIV. Okay, now I don't think he advertises that and stuff like that, but that's a matter of the fact. Okay, now, question. Is it possible for Marv Wilson to make a mistake? You don't know Marv Wilson. No. So you're therefore you're guaranteed that certain books are all right. Okay. Now, one thing we need to clarify right up, because I see some of you getting real serious at me and things. Do you understand sarcasm? Let me explain sarcasm. Now, this is very important. It's very important to be said on tape. When I say something sarcastic, that means I meant the exact opposite of what I just said. If you take it for what I've just said, question, are we totally missing each other? Okay, so what I just said, Dr. Wilson is one of the greatest men I've ever met in my life. That's the truth. Now, the truth is he does make mistakes and things like that, like all human beings make mistakes, okay? Now, he makes a lot less than I do, but he's quite a good person. You'll be reading, by the way, his book, Our Father Abraham. It's a classic around here at Gordon. We'll be talking about that in a minute. But anyways, what I'm trying to say is that how did the Bible come down to us? How did Dr. Wilson get it? Well, he got it. You said he translated it from Hebrew because he knows Hebrew so well. That's true. Where did he get the Hebrew texts from? Well, the Hebrew texts come from 1000 A.D., but where did those people from 1000 AD, where did they get the text? How did we get it from Moses all the way down to us? Did he have to get copied over and over again? When the people copied it, did they ever make mistakes? When people translated it into Greek, from Hebrew into Greek, and then from Greek into Latin Vulgate, did they ever make mistakes? When it comes over into English, do different translations disagree with each other? Which one do you pick? Okay? So how did the Bible come from way back then? How does it come down to us now? We want to trace that out and just be honest in our endeavors with that. Okay, there's a whole bunch of things here as far as goals and stuff, but I don't want to belabor that point. So let's jump into the textbooks on page 2 here. Jump over to your textbooks. This course, there's basically two things you've got to purchase for this course. One thing you should have is a Bible, okay? Translations that are open to use. Do most of you use the NIV? Any NIV users? How many of you use NIV? Okay, a lot of you use NIV. Good translation and things like that. I know some of the translators. And this is a good translation. It was done by good people and things. Does anybody use the NRSV? The NRSV? Okay, Kyle? Others? Okay, NRSV is a New Revised Standard Version, good version and stuff, done in a kind of more, English broad, more than just American English broad kind of thing. Does anybody use the ESV? ESV, okay. ESV and the RSV are like this. The ESV is, in my opinion, and by the way, let me just do this. When I walk over here, that means I am giving you my opinion. That is the Bible. This is my opinion. Do I have a right to an opinion? Yeah. But when I walk over here, question, do you trust that or not trust it? It's me. You trust it. No. Okay. I'm over here. What I'm trying to tell you is this is my opinion. I could be wrong. But I have checked the ESV out in thousands of places and stuff. And it's basically, it's a knockoff of the RSV, the NRSV. But the NRSV is very good, so it's good. ESV is good. Does anybody use the NLT, New Living Translation? You got to be really careful with that one, okay? Especially in the Book of Proverbs and other places, you have to be very careful with that NLT. Sometimes look up the Book of Proverbs in there and just see the problems with it. So I'm saying that with a smirk on my face. Anyways, okay. So what other translations do we have? King James Version. Does anybody do King James? Okay, King James, actually, you'll notice I will often quote out of the King James. I will be looking at the NIV and reading King James in my head, because when I was a kid, I was trained in the King James, and the King James is still very deep in me. The King James is one of the most beautiful translations ever done anywhere. It's a phenomenal thing. Does anybody use the New King James Version? Okay, the New King James Version, very helpful, takes out a lot of these and thous and makes it more readable. Well done thing, the New King James, those are fine. Now, I want to introduce something to you guys, and this is about 2 years ago, I had a girl in class who had trouble seeing. And so when I gave her a test, I gave her a 46-page test, because the font, seriously, the font had to be over 24 pitch. So each page was one question, you know, or two questions I could get on some pages and stuff, and she had trouble seeing. It was a year before last, I had, I don't want to use her name and stuff, but she sat right down front and stuff, great person and stuff, but she was blind, went around with a cane and stuff like that. And I realized then, how do you get the Word of God into somebody like that? They need to be able to, in the case of I don't want to say her name, but I better, Janice, let me just make up a name, Janice, she had to be able to blow up the font. Now, by the way, is a computer a wonderful thing for blowing up the font? Have you guys ever done that in the web where you put the control plus the plus, control plus, control plus, and you can make the font grow right on your screen? Control plus, control minus, and shrinks it down. Okay? So what I decided to do is to make my own translation of the Bible. Okay? And you say that's really arrogant, and it probably is, and it's probably stupid and stuff, but I did it. And what I'm calling it is the DASV. The DASV is the Digital American Standard Version. It's built off the ASV of 1901. I used that as my basis, and then I modified it to update it and make it into, and put it in. Now, what's the advantage when it's in digital format? Okay. It's online. It's on the screen. Can you print it? Yeah. It's in PDF. It's in DOC. Do you guys use DOC, Word? It's in HTML. PDF, you guys use PDF, HTML, DOC. What's the advantage of putting it in DOC? Can you drop it in your word processor? Can you cut and paste it? Yeah. What's the advantage of PDF? Can be read on Macs and PCs, wherever. What's the advantage of HTML? When you click it and it's in HTML, boom, it's on the screen instantly. So HTML is the language of the web. Okay. Plus, I also then made, unfortunately with my voice, what are called MP3s. Now, in the old days, they used to have these things you put on your arm. They used to be called, I think it was iPods. And you put these things on your arm, and then you put these things in your ears, and you kind of go around with this thing, and you go out jogging and stuff. Or if you're my wife, and you got to travel to Lowell every day, and you're traveling an hour, 10 minutes in the car, you cut the MP3, you put it on a CD, and you what? You listen to books while you're in the car. Because you're traveling 2.5 hours a day to go to work. So there's MP3s for the whole thing, which means then, can you listen to the scriptures? Yes. Okay. So that's one of the advantages of the DASV, and I'm exploring other things of using images and images with text, and combining images with text, and the digital format allows me to do that. That's up online, to be honest with you. 2 weeks ago, Thursday, I finished it finally, after a long time. I finally finished it, and it's at my editor's now. It's got Chronicles, will be the last one. Editor, my mother. But anyways, she's editing the last part, and we'll put it together. So the DASV is available for anybody who wants to use that and things as well. Now, the only book that you have to purchase for this class is Dr. Marv Wilson's book, Our Father Abraham. It's a classic here. It's done by Dr. Wilson, who teaches here. Are there used copies of Our Father Abraham all over this campus? Every student that's come here has had to buy that book. So there are used copies all over the place, and you should be able to get it fairly cheaply. Now, let me explain the last part of this class as far as what's acquired for this class. And let me walk over here to do that, okay? When I went to... The honest truth is, as I look at you guys, I could never have sat in those seats. The honest truth is, I could never have sat in the seats where you're sitting. I was when I went through college, I was really poor. I ended up working 40 hours a week going to school. You say, oh, that's really something, working 40 hours and go to school. That must have been neat. when you work 40 hours a week and go to school full-time in engineering. It's not neat. It's not fun. It's a lot of downright work, and it was a real hassle. But I was dirt poor. My parents, nobody in my family went to college, okay? And so I was the first one, okay? This collar that I wear is white now. That collar is really blue, okay? Blue to the core. My parents never went to college. Okay, so I was the only one who went to college, and my parents didn't have any money. They didn't, could barely afford to live, let alone, and so I ended up paying another. Therefore, question, did I grow up with a real sense of money meant something to me? About 5 years ago, I was assigning books for this class, and the books were getting up, and have you paid $100? Have you guys bought your books and stuff? Have you paid $100 for books for classes? And I was starting to, there was Old Testament starting to be $100 for books and stuff, and I said, this is crazy. I mean, if I were a student and I come to class and I get a charge $100 for books and stuff, so I said, there's got to be a better way to do this. I also know what it's like to publish books, have published books, publish CDs, et cetera, et cetera. And I know, how much does a publisher make? Let me put it this way. This is my wife's thing. She says, Dad, I spent all summer working on this article on wisdom literature, and I published it in the University Dictionary for Wisdom and Poetry and stuff, and they published my article. So I spent all summer working on it. We're talking 200, 300 hours worth of work. How much do I get paid for that? I'll just be flat out honest. How much do they get paid for that? $250. Figure it out. My wife is a CPA. She did. And she said, you're making less than $1 an hour, man. And she says, why don't you go to the Sam's Club or Walmart and be a greeter or something? At least you make minimum wage and stuff. It's like a 600% increase, Dad. Why don't you do that instead of writing all the stupid stuff? So anyways, so the publishers, what I'm telling you is the publishers make 90%. The people make less than 10% usually. Okay. So now what my thing is, leverage the what? And this is what I'm really into. Leverage the internet, leverage the digital for the good of others and for the glory of God. Leverage the digital for the good of others and for the glory of God. Now, how do we do that? Well, that means I know a lot of scholars now because I'm an old man. So I go around to my buddies and friends and stuff and I say, hey, you got a copyright on that article. Can we use that article at Gordon College? Post it up online. Now, question, when I post it online and stuff, what's the advantage of that? Can I now post it in full text, HTML, DOC, PDF. Can I also make it an MP3 file that you can listen to these articles so that you can listen as well as to read it? By the way, do some people like to read it as it's being read to them? And you can actually set up the, it reads to you while you go through the text and you get it in both your eyes and ears. So anyways, I've gone through and done that, and we have basically everything you need in the course is basically, now what's that cost you? It cost you $10. $10, okay? So you pay me $10 that provides you with all the materials for this course, and that's basically it, okay? Now, what that does is, to be honest with you, does it save everybody in this class at least $50, more like $75? Does it save everybody in this class $50? Yes, it does, okay? And they say, well, Hildebrand, you're making $10 a piece, man. You're making all this money. Okay, let me tell you this. After several years of doing this, how much do I make? The answer is right there. Because question, does it cost me? Frankly, do I have to pay some of the people, some of the stuff that we're going to see, the videos and stuff like that? I've had to pay those people. And so my goal is to, and I've been pretty successful at it so far, is to make nothing. And that's what I end up coming out with. By the time I'm done, how should I say, I use the stuff that you guys give me to develop more of this stuff, okay? And so that's kind of what's going on there. So, and that's all the cards out on the table, and that's the kind of the way it is. But it's $10 and stuff. So hopefully, I don't know. That's just what I'm doing and stuff like that. So that's it. And then now you say, where's all the stuff online you talk about? Holy cow! I got a virus. Better not. Okay. This is what they call the internet, and this is called. My name is Al Gore. I invented this. Sorry. Oh, man. I got to be careful about now. This is on videotape. But anyways, okay, yeah. This is what President Bush called then the Google. So I don't know my own URL. This is the honest truth. So here's how you get to my site. It's, by the way, it's outside Blackboard. It's out in public space. So by the way, when you go home, can you get at this stuff anywhere? It's on the web. Okay, so I'm going to go to the Google. Here's how I go to my own site. I go to Google and I type in Ted Hildebrand. So up here at the top, by the way, Irene's coming in. You may be aware of that Saturday. And I type in Ted Hildebrand. Okay, and I got Ted Hildebrand. Put a space after the Hildebrand there. Spell it correctly. Is it spell? Yeah. And I hit, okay, search. And then there it is. Do you see Theodore? Theodore is another name for Ted Hildebrand, and so they're bare, and it says Gordon College and stuff. So I hit this to go to my website, And then after I hit it, am I going to bookmark this? Because am I going to be going back there, back there, back there? So I bookmark it. And here's the site. Now, by the way, when you come in here, by the way, do you see the DASV, the Digital American Standard? That has the whole thing there. But do you see this says Old Testament Lit BCM 101? That's what? That's us. So you go Old Testament BCM, and you click there. And what have you here? Syllabus. Do you need this one? Yes, you do, because some of you are going to lose your syllabi and stuff. Is it always there? It's always there. So HTML, DOC, PDF, your syllabus. Okay, you've got copies of your syllabus now, so you don't need that one. Okay, here's some old study guides from old exams and things. Here's your first week assignment. What do you need to do for next Thursday? You're going to be reading Genesis 1 to 25. You can do it in the DASV. Here's the DASV here. You can do it in a zip file, DSV zip file. And now there's some articles you need to read. And so where are the articles? You just go down here, and you see this one here. It says Dr. Elaine Phillips, Theology Primer and Primer. And so you've got HTML, DOC, and then you've got an MP3 there. The MP3 means what? You right-click on the MP3, and you say Save As. You save it down to your computer. Have you got the audio for it? Ready to go now. Okay? So that's... Now, here's Dr. Perry Phillips. Dr. Perry Phillips is a PhD in astrophysics, and he's writing on the days of Genesis, the 7 days of creation. He's a scientist, PhD from Cornell University, and he writes on the days of Genesis, HTML, DOC, PDF, and MP3. You can listen to it. Here's Don Carson. Now, Carson is a super scholar and stuff, and I've got his Challenge to Pluralism. Again, the three formats and MP3, you can listen to that. Now, for this class, let me just give you the first couple of quiz questions for next Thursday. Here's your first quiz question. Did you, don't write this down, this is like dumb. Okay, all right. First question, did you read Genesis 1 to 25? How much did you read? Did you read 100%, 90%, 80%? How much of Genesis 1 to 25 did you read in the last 3 weeks? Okay, so I want you to do what? Read Genesis 1 to 25, okay? Did you read Elaine Phillips's primer, Theology Primer? Yes or no? Did you read Perry Phillips's Days of Genesis? Yes or no? How much if you didn't read the whole thing? Now, D.A. Carson, I'm going to ask you specific questions about Carson. So Carson, you need to read with more detail because I'm going to ask you probably one or two questions on the content of D.A. Carson's article. Okay, so notice the Carson. Read the other ones, but then notice that. Here are the memory verses, two memory verses, Genesis 1:27, 2:24. By the way, here are all the PowerPoints. I use PowerPoints in class. Here are all the PowerPoints that I will have on the screen. Question, does that mean you have to copy down all the PowerPoints? No. Just download them, put them on your machine. By the way, can you go into PowerPoint, pull all the text out, put it in Word, or just even take notes on your PowerPoint? The PowerPoints are there, so you don't have to write everything down. It's there, and you can use those, okay? Is that, do you see the benefit of that? And things. So the PowerPoints are listed here, and you can get those in PowerPoints. Bible aerobics, we'll do some Bible aerobics, and we'll do that in a few minutes. Here's a multiple choice quizzer. When you read Genesis 1 to 25, here are the stories that I want you to know. You'll be reading big chunks of the Bible. I can't have you know everything, right? So what I'll list the stories that I want you to know in detail, and I'll ask you specific questions on those stories. Now, I also built a flash quizzer, Bible quizzer, on the book of Genesis. So I'm going to click this Genesis thing just to show you what this is. It's kind of a fun thing. Here's a Bible quizzer built online. And this is all online, you know, out there. You can view it from anywhere. This is the book of Genesis in chapters 1 to 50. And then it says, do you want beginning, intermediate, or advanced? What do you guys want to try? Advanced. Okay, these guys are good. All right, let's try the advanced questions. And I'm going to click off the beginning, and then we're going to hit next. And then about 10 minutes later, it'll come up. Woo. It came up quickly. Okay, so... our first question, what did Jacob put on Rachel's tomb? Flowers? Usually put flowers on a tomb, right? A pillar, a stone from each of his children. Did anybody see Schindler's List? You put stone. Anyways, an altar to the Lord. Somebody said an altar, okay? So we're going to pick an altar. Now, what color came up? This is supposed to be. This is supposed to be red, okay? So it's in your face. You get boom, got it wrong, okay? Stuff. It was really, the answer was what? Comes up in what? Green. The color, growing color. So it was really a pillar. He built a pillar on their thing and stuff, but that isn't a bad guess. An altar to the Lord. They did build a lot of altars. So then I hit next and we can go and we say, in the time of the descendants of Shem was on the earth was divided in whose time? And then it gives you this name. By the way, are these advanced questions? Yeah. Nimrod, that was an excellent guess. It was an excellent guess because Nimrod was a mighty hunter before the Lord. But she guessed, and I don't want to push Nimrod because I don't want to feel bad again, so I'm going to tell you it's Peleg. The word Peleg, the word Peleg in Hebrew means to divide, you know, like the dividing of languages. So I'm going to, maybe, should I pick the right one? Why don't I pick Luddite? Why don't I pick Luddite just in honor of the Luddites? Do you know what a Luddite is? Anyways. Okay, I'm going to pick Luddite, and you see the answer was really Peleg. So Peleg comes up as the right answer, and it says, no, Luddites is wrong. Anyway, so, yes, sir.
I'm honestly scared by the questions.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying we shouldn't have picked the advanced questions. These are advanced. If you pick the beginning questions, it'll say, whose wife was Adam? I mean, who's, yeah. No. Who was Adam's wife? Or, you know, something like that, okay? Okay, so, you know. All right. Actually, see what he's doing? Let me start over here. Actually, let me go back to the quiz selector. So you just go back to the quiz selector. He's paranoid, so let me just go here, hit next. Okay, here's a question, the beginning question, okay? Who lived the longest in Genesis 5? Who lived the longest of anybody anywhere?
Methuselah.
Okay, so that's a question like this. Now, you say, Stink, I still didn't know Methuselah. Okay, I still didn't know Methuselah. Okay, this Bible quizzer is on here. All the questions on the quiz will be taken from the easy section, the beginning sections. So all you can do is go through, run through the beginning ones, and it'll come up with 193 questions. You just buzz through those. It doesn't take that long. And, you know, what I'm saying, these are the questions that will come up. Methuselah will not be on your quiz, however. So, okay. So does everybody see how this works and stuff? So let me get back to... So that was out of here, this New Testament quizzer and Old Testament quizzer. And I've got Genesis to Deuteronomy done. And then, frankly, to be honest with you, I was writing 700 questions for the book of Genesis. I just ran out of time and I haven't done any more. And I haven't been able to reprogram the flash. And there's a bunch of stuff I need to do and I just haven't had time to do it. But I've got Genesis to Deuteronomy done. Now, Genesis to Deuteronomy is a pretty big chunk, by the way. So we'll have the quizzer for that. And then here are the stories that you'll need to know. And let's kill this, okay? Now. Okay. Let's go back to your syllabus. So, now, one of the things that we'll be doing in the class, there's an attendance policy here, extra credit. Before I do the extra credit, let me describe an assignment, and you can be thinking about this. I'm wanting you today to break up into groups. So you'll be breaking up into groups of six or seven. So look around, think about breaking up into groups of six and seven. Now, what you're going to do by next Thursday, and this is, let me try to explain what this is going to be. What you're going to do is I'm going to give you a 10-minute section of audio, and you're going to type that what the person set up. 10 minutes of audio, you're going to type it up. Okay? I call it transcribing. Do you know what transcribing is? You listen and you transcribe 10 minutes, and boom, you got it. Now, there'll be six people in your group, so that means 10 minutes. You take the six people, you put it together, you got what? You got an hour lecture, okay? So I've got lectures by Dr. Dave Mathewson, by Dr. Robert Vinoy. These guys, some of these guys are really super scholars and stuff, and we're going to transcribe their stuff to put them into what? HTML, DOC, and PDF. Now, why am I doing this? Okay, let me just walk over here again and stuff, and just, why am I doing this? Because this never sells very well with the students, but I keep saying it. I'm hoping it catches on. When I went to college, it was like, hey, I'm going to college. Feed me, teach me all this stuff, teach me. And it was all this direction. And what I'm wanting you to do is think about, you guys are in wonderful seats. You're at Gordon College. Is Gordon College really an incredible place? You're lucky to be here. We don't use the word luck anymore. Okay, but it's a special thing that you're here. And my thing is, we at Gordon College, do we need to be developing things to help Christian people from other places that don't have it as well as we do? So what we want to do is then create these lectures that are pulled from Dr. Robert Vinoy, who's a specialist in Samuel and stuff. We'll take his lectures, we'll transcribe these lectures, and make them available to people all over the world. By the way, will people all over the world come to Gordon College to use these lectures to help them in the Christian church? The answer is yes. And so I want you to think about learning in terms of producing things that help other people who aren't as privileged as we are. Now you say, okay, that just means work. Yeah, okay, it means an hour's worth of your time, an hour's worth of work, and we put it all together. So in each one of your groups of six or seven, you're going to have one person that's an editor. Had they better be an English major or somebody like that? Okay, you got one person who's an editor, and you got, you know, what we call scribes, and we got five or six scribes, and the five or six scribes, you'll get an MP3 audio, you'll type it up, the 10 minutes, it'll take you about an hour, depends how fast you type. By the way, let me tell you a really important secret. And you say, Hildebrandt, how do you know all this stuff? I have done hours and hours of transcription myself, so I know exactly how long this stuff takes and how the problems with it. When you get your audio, if you put it on full steam, does the guy talk a lot faster than you can type? Yeah, he's talking a mile a minute, and you can't keep up. If you are in Windows, and you're in the Windows Media Player, there's a play button. It's got a triangle for the play button. If you right-click on that play button, you can set it to slow. And it slows it way down. Now, question, what's the advantage? If Vinoy goes slow, can I almost keep up to him typing? I still can't keep up to him, but now I can do, and I do a minute at a time. I'll do like a minute of typing, and then what do? I grab the little scrubber thing on the bottom, and you take it back. Do you know how to do that? You scrub back, and you play it again, the 1 minute. You do it again, and then you type, and do it again. So basically, after about two or three times of pulling it back and going over the 1 minute, question, have I got the 1 minute typed? And then I'll go to the second minute. It'll be 1 minute to 2 minute. And I'll just go through and I'll type as fast as I can the first time. I'll get about 80, 70% of it. Then I'll scrub back to the 1 minute mark and I'll listen to two again. But that going slow is really important, really helpful. Now, Mac people, I'm not a Mac person and I'm a Christian. So it just, sorry. But anyway, I shouldn't say that, especially on the day that Steve Jobs stepped down today. I shouldn't say that. Okay, Steve Jobs stepped down today, so that was a big deal for Apple, for you Mac people. But anyways, on the Mac, you can get the Mac to go slow too. Now, I don't know how to do it, but I'm told if you go into properties or something in the Mac player, you can get Mac to go slow, and you can set it to go slow. So Mac can do it too. Check with CET to see if they know how to do that. I don't know how to do it because it's Mac, and I'm just a PC person. So. Okay, so that's coming up. Be thinking about the groups you're going to break into. Now, in this course, I have a thing too. If you want a good grade in this class, you can take the test. Basically, this is how the class will work. Every Thursday, quiz, 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 quiz. Every about fifth week, it'll be what? Test. Quiz, 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 test. Quiz, 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 test. That's how it goes, okay? So quiz, 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 test, quiz, 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 test, okay? Every Thursday is a quiz or test, that kind of thing. Now, if you say, man, I'm bombing Hildebrandt's things, I don't know who Methuselah's mother was, you know, and Hildebrandt had this question of Methuselah's mother. I didn't know, you know, so I missed it and stuff. I want to better my grade and stuff. You can do extra credit in here. You can do extra transcriptions, and I've got, by the way, we're taping this whole thing. We can do transcriptions of this class, actually. And then we'll put the transcriptions up as we get them too, as well for the whole class, just to help other people and stuff. So, anyways, you can do transcriptions of other. I've got this R. Laird Harris guy who taught the book of Leviticus, was an expert in Leviticus. We can do his stuff and things. So you can do that for extra credit. You do a transcription. You have to do a whole transcription of a whole hour and stuff. It takes you usually about it's probably 6 hours, 6 to 10 hours and stuff. But then, boom, 5 points of extra credit on your final exam. On your final thing. So that's one way to do it. You can do memory verses as well. Then I also want to advertise a little bit for the honors option. What is the honors option? The honors option on page 5 works like this, okay? If you score better than a 92 on the first exam and you've got quizzes better than a 90, you can ask for the honors option. What that is you can get out of the final exam by doing two transcriptions yourself. Now, what that amounts to, two transcriptions are going to run you what? Probably about 10 to 12 hours. Okay? Now you say, well, it's 10 to 12 hours, and I could get. What's the advantage of not taking the final? Question. Comes finals week, are all the other classes having finals and stuff? Is finals week is tough with all these exams and stuff? If you can offload one of those finals and say, I don't have to take a final in Old Testament class, question, does that free you up to study better for your other exams? Okay, use your heads. So this way, you can do the transcription. When do you got to do that? You can do that on your own time, whenever you want. And then you get out of the final. Okay, so there's benefits to doing that. So that's called the honors option. The evaluations here are given for my, I grade on a curve. Okay, I grade on a curve. And but this is where I start my curve, my grading and stuff. But if you want to do the extra work, you can get the grade. Just do the extra credit work and things like that, and you can kind of adjust your own grade and things. I believe in curves and stuff. I used to teach with an old guy. He was 75 years old, and he says he didn't believe in curving. He didn't believe in curving. He says curves belong on roads in baseball and on women, not on exams and stuff like that. Now, I say that. The guy's 75 years old. Give him a break, okay? You say, that's a very sexist statement. The guy's 75. Hey, but anyways, I always said curves also belong on my test scores, because you know what I'm saying? And so we work with that. I got another story. Okay. Now, on the next, if you flip over, the audio project is described on page 6 with the audio transcription thing there. And then if you go over to page 8 is what you, this is what you need to keep open. This is where the action happens. And this is basically September 1st. Do you see September 1st? What is due next Thursday? What is due next Thursday? You've got to read the theology primer. You've got to do the days of Genesis. You've got to read the challenges of the pluralism. By the way, do you have to read the theology primer and the days of Genesis? Do you have to know all the details of that or just read it? Just read it, okay? You don't have to know details. You have to know details on the challenge of pluralism. Read the Bible, Genesis 1 to 25, and then basically you've got to do your transcriptions are due next Thursday too, which I see isn't listed here. But those will be due next week, and we'll break into groups in a minute here. Okay, we're going to break into groups. But before we break into groups, you guys have to know Genesis 1 to 25. I want to teach you Genesis 1 to 25 in Bible aerobics. That means everybody's up. We're going to do Genesis 1 to 25. Here's how it goes, okay? Everybody stand up and be thinking about breaking into your groups. Be thinking about breaking into your groups, but here's Genesis, okay? So 7 to 8 in this room every Wednesday night. He'll be running review sessions for the exam. The quizzes are always on Thursday, so he'll be doing it Wednesday night here, 7 to 8. So that's handy to know, and he'll get you set up for that. Okay, let's jump back in. We've got to do two more things. We've got a Bible assessment thing that we're going to try to assess, you know, kind of the knowledge level that you guys have, and that'll be our first quiz, actually. But it doesn't count, you know, but it's just a kind of an assessment instrument we do. But before we do that, I just want to get started on this. We say at Gordon College that we believe that this book, the Bible, is the Word of God. Now that makes some assumptions. If this is the Word of God, then our first assumption is there is a what? There's a God. Do we live in a culture where atheism is trying to make a big comeback? There's about, what, 4% of the Americans are atheists and stuff, and they're trying to make a big comeback and things. And so there's all this, you know, the Dawkins and et cetera, stuff that's doing. So why do we believe there's a God? By the way, can we prove the existence of God? The answer is no. Is it reasonable to believe that there is a God? Yes, okay, but we can't prove it. So what I want to do is just run through some of the proofs. The first proof that we're going to use is basically this one of the cosmological argument. And by the way, these arguments actually are all on the web. There's a whole sheet, and actually I'll give you a sheet next time with these all printed on them and stuff. But the cosmological argument basically works like this. Cause-effect. If I look at you, question, can I assume that you had some parents? Now, by the way, is it possible you may not know your parents and stuff like that, but did you have parents at one point? Now you say, well, now they can do it in a test tube. Okay, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, with you guys that look at you, you can assume that you had a parents, okay? So you look at causes, you see an effect. You see a train wreck. Can you assume when you see a train wreck that something went wrong and that there's, you know, you see effects of things. Can you assume causes? Cause-effect. And by the way, have cause-effect worked all the way down? Over thousands of years, cause-effect. Now, what happens when you get back to the first cause? What is the first cause that caused, like, everything? What, you know, cause-effect, work all the way back. Well, what's the first cause? Now, you say, well, the first cause was the whole universe was come together in one big, or actually it was small, it was about the size of a grapefruit, wasn't it? It's supposed to be a grapefruit or a watermelon or something. But anyways, it was all together at once. And then what happened? Boom, it exploded, and the universe came, okay? What caused that initial thing to happen? Did, you know, and now, by the way, do even scientists have to come up who don't believe in God? Do they have to come up with some first cause to get this thing going? We as Christians would say the first cause is what? God. And so, in other words, cause, effect, cause, effect, cause, effect. We go back to the original cause, the first cause is God. Okay? Do other people have to propose something else as the first cause? And by the way, when you've got all the whole universe together in a watermelon and you've got to blow that whole thing up, do you have to have something that can defy gravity and just blow the thing up like that? What kind of force does that take? A universe, okay? So the first one is the first cause, and we would suggest that God is our first cause. Other people may propose other causes, but when you use this cause and effect thing, you go back, it's like that. This one I like a lot. This is called the teleological argument, and this is the argument from design. And what this means is, I call it my Jolly Green Giant argument. Okay, you guys are all sitting in chairs. Do you see how the chairs are arranged? Rows. You got an aisle there, aisle there, aisle there, aisle there, and what about 10 rows going back and stuff? Now, what's going to happen is there's a Jolly Green Giant. We're going to unhook all the chairs. Don't do this. Okay, we're going to unhook all the chairs. The Jolly Green Giant then is going to pick up the building of Jinx, and he's going to shake it, and he's going to put it down. And when he puts it down, I want the chairs to be in exactly this same order. Now, by the way, there's what, 110 chairs? Is that a big deal? 110 chairs, I want them exactly in, you know, aisle there, aisle there, aisle there, aisle there, with these rows, three there, four there, five. Okay, exactly like the setup and stuff. Now, I'll let him do it a billion times. He will shake Jenks a billion times and put it down. Question, do you think after a billion times it would come out exactly like this?
No.
Oh, you say, oh, stink. We're Americans. We don't do billions anymore. We're Americans. We do trillions. Now, I wouldn't laugh too hard if I were you because you guys are the ones who are stuck. But anyways, so I'll give you a billion trillions. I'll give you a billion trillions. The giant is going to shake it for a billion trillion years. He's going to keep doing it. How many of you think after a billion trillion years that the chairs would line up just like this? Do you think that after he did it the first time, these chairs would get so tangled up that they would be a mess for the ref forever? Okay, when you see an order, if you came into this room and you were just like born out of the cosmic ethos, and you came into this room and you walked into this as your first experience as a little baby, you come in and you looked around and you saw these chairs, would you assume that these chairs just, there must have been a glacier that pushed these chairs into this order like that? When you saw the order, let me do a different thing. Let me take you into Sinai. Walk with me in the desert of Sinai, which I did for many weeks because my guide said we had to walk Sinai. We're walking in Sinai. Are there rocks everywhere? There's rocks everywhere. And all of a sudden, we walk up on this one thing, and there's a circle of rocks about this big, maybe 10 feet around. And on the western side, there's two rocks set up like this, and there's a rock that goes over this like this, and there's a hole in there on the west side. And you can kind of crawl in there. It's like a igloo made out of rocks, okay? Now, question, when we saw that Nawamis, that igloo at the first time, when we saw that, and by the way, there were 10 of them. There were 10 of them, and they all faced the west, and they had the door with the thing. It was like for midgets or something. You had to get under and go in. So anyways, but what I'm saying is, when we hit all 10 of those, and they all faced the west with the door on the west, and the door was about this high and stuff, question, did we assume that that was just, that must have just happened that way? The glacier just kind of dropped them down that way. How many of you, when you walk up and you saw 10 of them all facing the west with the doorway hollow in the middle and stuff like that, how many of you would assume that was, that was just natural causes. Nobody did that. It just happened that way. When you see that level of order, when you see that level of order, you say somebody did that. Have you ever walked through, some of you are from New Hampshire, you walk through the woods, and all of a sudden you're back in the woods, and all of a sudden you see this row of rocks all lined up straight, and it looks like a rock wall. When you see that rock wall all lined up straight and stuff, did you assume that the glacier did that, or did you assume that people did that? When you see that level of order, do you think that order demands a what? A person that ordered it, right? When you come into this room and you see all these chairs lined up like that, is this obviously the work of a human being? Somebody set this up. Is it luck that the chairs came like this? And if you shook it a million times, it still, there would be mess. It wouldn't be this kind of order. So this basically is an argue from order, that because the universe, is the universe many more times ordered than this room? Yes, therefore there must be an order or someone who orders this stuff. In other words, it just doesn't luckily happen. Otherwise, you know, you'd have chaotic elements and stuff. Well, there is chaos and stuff. So this leads to a thing called intelligent design. And by the way, are there different people who have different opinions on this thing of intelligent design? Okay? And again, I want to walk over here. Are there different people on this campus that have different views on the intelligent design? And some people say, oh, no, I don't believe intelligent design. I think evolution was more the thing. Other people are more creationistic, you know, creationistic things. Intelligent design says what? That the universe is designed, that the universe has a designer. Now, by the way, the people that develop this, some of the scientists will say, oh, these people that do intelligent designs, they're a bunch of morons. They're not real scientists. Let me just tell you about William Craig. He's not a real scientist. He's just got a PhD in mathematics from the University of Chicago. Yes, and I forgot to say, he also has a PhD from the University of Chicago in philosophy, a double PhD. So he's a real idiot, isn't he? You say that's University of Chicago. We're Harvard people out here. I just want to tell you, there are other schools that are decent outside Massachusetts. And the University of Chicago is a top flight school. He got two PhDs out of the place in mathematics. A person that gets a PhD in mathematics, does that say something? You need to think about that. Yeah. Okay. So this guy, question, does he know some stuff about science and stuff? And the answer is yes. And so he's one of the people that's behind intelligent design. What I'm trying to say is there are tons of people that hold intelligent design who are first-class scientists and first-class order. So don't be careful about this. Well, scientists don't hold that. That's wrong. There are tons of science that hold intelligent design. So anyways, I just want you to think about some of these types of things. Can we prove the existence of God? No. But question, do these things lead us, when we see order in the universe of the magnitude we see it, does that lead us to think that someone ordered this stuff? I ask you to look at this classroom. If you came in here, would you assume that somebody put these chairs in the set, that it didn't happen just by chaos? And so all I'm saying is the universe is of orders of magnitude. By the way, let me just say this, and then we'll have you start taking that assessment instrument thing. Dr. Perry Phillips, PhD in astrophysics from Cornell University. Decent. PhD, astrophysics, Cornell University. He's married to Dr. Elaine Phillips, teaches Old Testament. Dr. Perry Phillips is going to do a talk on the Big Bang Theory next Monday night at 7 o'clock. And this coming Monday night, 7 o'clock down in Jenks 237. I'll send you guys an email on this, but anyways, Jenks 237, 7 o'clock, Perry Phillips is going to discuss the Big Bang Theory and how he thinks that leads to that there is a God. And first-class scientists and stuff, I know Perry Phillips very well. I lived with Perry and Elaine, and we lived as two couples in Israel for a year together. And question, do you get to know a person real well when you live together like that for a year? And that's one of the reasons I want to tell you, just between us here, Dr. Perry Phillips is one of the most godly, incredible Christian men I've met in my lifetime. And I consider him a dear friend of 30-some years now. But he's also a full-quality scientist. The guy, you know, PhD astrophysics, very, very, very bright dude. So he's doing that Monday night, and it's free lecture, 7 o'clock, Jenks 237, if you've ever wondered about the Big Bang and that kind of stuff. So, okay, we have one more thing to do here, and that is to do this assessment thing. So I'm going to pass this out. And if I could get somebody to help me down here, I'll give you these stack and this stack and just kind of pass them out over there.